back on the Rule of Three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. Later in the show, we are going to be talking about fan mail. And I can't even say fan mail without thinking about that Bullwinkle line.
Oh, sure.
do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's from the end of the thing? When it enters the letters from the fans. I can't do it. I clearly am not.
Look, Bullwinkle, a message in a bottle. Fan mail from some flounder?
Yeah. That was not the one I was thinking of, but yeah.
That's it. So there's my ancient cartoon impression for the
slightly
day.
Better than mine, though. So good for you.
We're gonna be talking about fan mail from some flounder, and then also we're gonna be talking about Kevin Spacey
getting less fan mail lately.
Well, no, he's getting fan mail from some sharks, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, which, that's probably true. Whole different set of fans now. A lot of things coming from various government addresses, as it were, stamped by the state.
I was thinking attorneys. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, well, he's getting a lot of fan mail. Yeah.
A lot of fan mail from attorneys right now. But the first topic that I think needs to be addressed is Donna Brazile is coming out with a new book, and she is going. She is going on a tour. She should have actually called her book What Really Happened.
Oh, that would have been a really good title.
Because apparently she has decided to trash the presidential candidate in the last election. And it's I'm not sure what happened when she first published the article where she said if you haven't seen the news, I guess I should probably do a little recap here, is that she said that Hillary Clinton essentially took over the DNC as early as summer of 2015, long before the nominating process had run its course. And she had agreed to bail the DNC out of bankruptcy that it had been left in by the previous head of the party. And in return, she was going to be given full control of the DNC. So she was actually, when people say that the fix was in, Donna Brazile seems to agree that yes, the fix was in, and she did not like it.
I saw that one of the things that they did, because the Clintons were controlling Hillary was controlling the money. Was that there was money that was basically designated for sort of broader DNC downstate stuff, and she was using that during the primary while Sanders was still in the race.
Oh yeah,
she was using some of that. Yeah,
yeah, she was like playing hungry hippo with the other three players, hands bound behind their back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though she was probably going to win that primary anyway.
Well. It had seemed in the beginning to me that that the assumption was that she was the nominee, that was it. Everyone pretty much just assumed it was Hillary's turn, and it almost seemed in the beginning that that Bernie was just brought in to make it look like that there was a process going on, that there was a choice, but. About halfway through, Bernie said, "Oh my God, I think I can win this." And actually started running a real campaign.
And I don't mean that as an exculpatory thing when I say it seems like she was going to win anyway. I just mean like it seems almost like it's kind of like robbing an ATM to pay a bill you had the money for in your house. You know? But it's a bad move. I don't mean like she was going to anyway, so it doesn't matter. No, it's pretty seedy. It definitely doesn't.
Well, she felt she needed a lot of money to mount a campaign, which the last election kind of disproved that money is kind of a side note. It helps, but it doesn't seem necessary. I mean, there were literally billions spent against Donald Trump's millions.
Well, except for the fact that it was a special case because he basically got millions and hundreds of tens of hundreds of millions, perhaps, in in-kind TV donations from networks. I mean, it was a weird scenario where because he had this sort of celebrity, you know, he was sort of transitioned from being a celebrity into a politician, that he just got all this free celebrity coverage for quite a while before. I mean, how much would it have cost her to pay CNN to run her entire hour-long rally on a Tuesday, you know, 5 weeks in a row?
Didn't they?
I'm not saying they never ran a rally. There's no way it was even close. And we both remember the primaries and how much Trump got caught.
Oh, sure. But I don't think it was necessarily the major media coverage. I think actually, I think this
so social media.
Yeah, I think this election was totally social media. This was all new media. And the money essentially buys old media.
But the money's gonna. They're gonna trust me. Money's money. It's gonna find its way into new media, and it'll be a thing. It was just this was a transition period. Let's wait till everyone just has to get.
Well,
that's
a thing too. It also came out that the Russians spent $100,000 on Facebook ads, which kind of for me, kind of turned me off on Facebook ads because they spent $100,000 to run 20 memes, none of which I ever saw before. You can look at the memes that the Russians paid to put up there. I didn't see any of them before.
What they also do is pay a lot of people to have fake accounts, and then they pay those people to promote the same stories and to follow people in such a way so that then those other people start to see those stories more in their feed, gaming the algorithm. I mean, spending money, quote-unquote, on Facebook is not all about giving money to Facebook. It's spending money to have people help you manipulate Facebook and Twitter.
Right, but I believe that $100,000 was spent, that was direct, that was the direct payment to Facebook. That was, I think they spent a lot more, yes, people hiring people to troll, and the hundred grand was in Facebook ads.
What I think is interesting is the Facebook.
I would have been, if you would have targeted ads for somebody that was interested in politics, I should have gotten at least one of those targeted ads. So I am suspicious of whether Facebook advertising really works.
Well, that's the conundrum for Facebook, because they're claiming the Russians had no influence in the election, but they're also claiming their ads are super effective so that they can get more people to pay them. So which is it, Facebook? did Russia have no influence through Facebook in the election, or do your ads work? Because they're kind of between a rock and a hard place in that regard.
Interestingly, I was catching up on some South Park last week. And did you know that Dr. Chaos was back in South Park?
Yes, I did.
This season?
running the trolling operation, as I recall.
Yes, a social
Pretty
media
ironic,
campaign.
Given the various circumstances.
If you're a longtime fan of the show, and why wouldn't you be? You know that Brian and I were talking about Dr. Chaos, and if you wanna, I think it's actually Dr. Chaos is actually the title, so you can actually scroll back to some episodes if you wanna. If you wanna,
it's
listen
the first
to
thing
Dr.
I
Chaos
thought of when I saw that episode.
Yeah, me too.
It was a good episode, too. It was classic Butters, you know, even as a villain. He's just sort of running this sort of dull, bureaucratic, you know, boring. Was it an old Circuit City warehouse or something like that? It's pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah. And he changed the name to Chaos City.
Yeah, that's right.
All it was missing was a podcast.
Yeah. So do you think that the Donna Brazil thing, do you think this is the final purge of the Clintons from the...
Yes.
I do, too. Yes. And do you think this is... There's people within the DNC who really want that, and this is all part of that effort?
Yeah. Well, I think there's actually a civil war going on. And I think this is not the first salvo. Is I believe the first salvo was Harvey Weinstein. I believe that was... It's my speculation. I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show before. It's my speculation that Hillary met with Harvey and said, I'm going for 2020. And Harvey said, you're out of your mind. And so Hillary grabbed the phone and said, yeah, drop the Weinstein dossier in Ronan Farrow's lap, please.
That's pretty conspiratorial.
Oh, it's very conspiratorial. But that's, you know, I'm I'm not trying to sell it. I have no evidence. That's just my feeling.
You just like to believe it?
I like to believe it. And I would like to go on about why I believe it, but... We're going to be talking about fan mail in the next segment. But this segment, that kind of actually segues from where we left off in the last segment, is about Kevin Spacey, who seems to be getting swept up in the people who have decided now that that it's okay to admit they were harassed sexually in Hollywood. And Kevin Spacey, apparently, was a little overly aggressive with other actors and
children.
Yeah. He did not really care. Did not really care about whether or not they were of the age of consent. When he would bestow his affections upon them, and it's for me, it makes it easier because I've always confused my Kevins. I think I've brought that up before. There just seems to be so many Kevins in show business, and they all kind of jumble together. And I
really?
Often, yeah.
Klein, Costner, Bacon, and Spacey?
Klein, Costner, Spacey, Bacon, Hart.
Kevin Hart? If you can't tell Kevin Hart from Kevin Spacey, you need new glasses.
Well, most of the time I read it. I mean, if it was a picture and these are the Kevins, I could probably say, okay, that's Costner, that's Spacey, that's Klein, that's Bacon, that's... But yeah, I've often confused my Kevins. But Spacey, there's no question about that Spacey will stand out. And of course, Netflix. It seems that the House of Cards season 6, is that what's on right now?
I guess they had just started filming season 6, pre-production or maybe some
okay,
filming.
Okay, so season 5 is the one that's out. So
season 5
six,
is out, yeah. 6 was, yeah. Was going to be the last one anyway. They had already said that.
I think season 4 should have been the last one.
No, I completely agree.
I agree with you. I watched one episode of season 5 and I just went, I don't think I can take this.
I dropped out in 3. I thought it got pretty boring in 3.
Yeah, I stuck through it. I stuck through it in 4, hoping that it would, something would happen.
And a couple of things happen, but it's like you could have gotten to all the things that happen in like 5 episodes and skipped another 10 of just sort of dithering.
Right. There is no more. They have pretty much run out of interesting plot lines. They've used pretty much everything they could.
Yep.
They've gone everywhere they could, and there's just nothing. There's just nothing more interesting. It's almost to the point of where House was towards
yeah.
the end.
You're like, yeah. He takes pills. He's mean. He's a doctor. We got you.
yeah. He comes in. They don't know what it is. They think it's something, so they treat it. She starts coughing blood, and then something ironic sort of happens in House's life that he goes, "Oh, I know what it is now," and then goes back, and it's right, and then she's fine.
Well, what's interesting is the one thing I think they could have probably done to make that show more interesting is something they might wind up doing now, which I thought, wouldn't it be more interesting if they killed him off and followed her, which they came close to doing in the last season. And I'm sure now, I wish they would have.
I know. I'm sure they wish they would have.
Yeah.
Because not only would it have been talked about as, oh my gosh, I can't believe they killed off the star. I don't think it's ever been done.
No.
I don't think they have ever in any series, no matter how expendable the non-star, the surrounding, the supporting actors are. The star is never. It would have been the first time ever a surprise episode. No, he really died.
Yeah. And it would have been might have made me start rewatching the show. And I think they might go back and do that. I mean, someone at Netflix is doing the money, and they're like, or doing the math, and they're like, well, this show's really big. People hate Kevin Spacey, but that doesn't mean they hate the show. I mean, her character had gotten so prominent on that show that it's not implausible to imagine it being about her,
Yeah. Yeah. No, she could look in the camera.
Yeah. In fact, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen House of Cards, that was the big twist at the end of last season, was that she started talking to the camera.
Oh, You just spoiled it for me.
Oh, I thought you said you weren't going to watch it anymore. It's terrible.
Well, whatever.
You're not missing it. Huh. Maybe that's, I don't know.
That's interesting that she's talking to the camera now. So they've already set it up.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, they can really get rid of him.
Wow. Well, that's that was Spacey's gone. I knew I shouldn't have agreed to that.
Should have thrown himself in front of the camera when she started talking to it.
So,
well, apparently this sort of seems like, I mean, I feel like I knew this was going to happen, but I didn't know who it was going to be when the Harvey Weinstein thing was coming up. And you're thinking, okay, there has to be at least one, if not several other people that everybody's known about for a while. That they were just waiting to kind of report on. And that didn't, I mean, once
Seth MacFarlane apparently knew about. I mean, he made the joke at the Academy Awards about Harvey. And then in Family Guy, there was also a Kevin Spacey joke.
Yep. Yep.
So Seth knew.
Oh, I think a lot of people knew about it. Here's what's weird. I realized something very strange last night. I knew about it. This is going to sound strange, but two decades ago, very long time ago, I was talking to a friend of mine who actually is from Minnesota, but I didn't live there at the time. We were sort of, long story short, I was talking to this girl, and she was a high school kind of theater type actress or whatever, you know, and we both like movies. And she was like, said something about how she had a crush on Kevin Spacey, but well, what's the point of that? And I said, what do you mean? You know, this is around 1995-ish. She said, well, I've heard Kevin Spacey is gay. And this is at the time where that rumor or whatever, I'd never heard of it. Of course, it was mostly pre-internet or early internet, as it were. And I said, I never heard that. And she said, yeah, a friend of hers had like PA'd on some movie. And, you know, he'd graduated a couple of years before her and was out in Hollywood. And he said that Kevin Spacey had such an affinity for grabbing the crotches of young men on the set that her friends had all nicknamed him the Nut Cupper. And he was regularly referred to on set as the Nut Cupper. And it's one of those sort of dumb stories that, like, who cares in my brain. And I was like, oh, wait, this is exactly what all the news stories are now saying that he does.
Yeah. That's that is funny. Nope, that is not the story. That is not the story that I heard. I'm relaying a story from Facebook. I'm not going to name the gentleman. I don't know if he wants to be or not. But he was up in northern Minnesota working as an extra on a Kevin Spacey film. And he was a young kid, and he was leaning up against the video game, probably Galaga.
Sure.
And Kevin Spacey came up to him and put his arm around him and started tickling his hand. And being a young ignorant boy, he went, "Oh, I got to go to the bathroom." And Kevin Spacey's eyebrows raise, and he minces behind him all the way to the bathroom, and takes the stall right next to him. And
Larry Craig foot tap action going on here.
And he looks over, and Kevin Spacey's looking right down at him.
Oh my! And, from above.
And then he can't help but look over and notice that that Kevin is quite interested.
Ah! In fairness, your friend accidentally sent the exact wrong message. Sure, this, you know, like.
Yeah, no, what he says. That's what he says. As a kid, he had no idea.
Yeah.
What he was saying. It was just, we can get out of here. Oh, the bathroom's safe.
Yeah. This is awkward. I need to slip into something more comfortable.
Exactly. Exactly. I've actually looked back. It's probably don't have time to get into it. I've actually looked back at in my youth is that there were probably a half a dozen passes delivered that I was unaware of.
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple of those, and in retrospect, I mean, obviously nothing untoward like a Kevin Spacey thing. I mean, you know, a totally inbounds, reasonable type thing. But just because I'm dumb, and, you know, you just I'm bad enough knowing when girls are hitting on me, much less when dudes are hitting on me. It's just cluelessness on my part. And you look back and you go,
Yeah. I think I was the same way. I think both seemed equally improbable to me.
It's more like a lack of self-esteem on my part than any other, any agenda. I think old Kevin is done. I think he's off the roll call, don't you?
Uh-huh. And you know what else is done?
Yeah. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, interesting story. I'm curious to hear if you've ever had an interaction with an audience member quite like this one. I did a show last week at the Tenzenwald Brewing Company, which is a nice little brewery in Northfield, Minnesota. Free plug. Little small town about an hour and a half south of the cities. And I was doing the show, and it was I didn't even think about it when I booked it. It was awfully close to Halloween. And so it was a little bit lighter attended because it was sort of fell during that 4-day period when younger people almost so recently, I was one of those people, sort of partied for 3 days or 4 days around Halloween. But it was a good show. And some people were out there, and then there was one fellow who was pretty enthusiastic, and he had some Halloween masks, and he was putting them on and sitting at the bar, and he clearly knew people. He, middle-aged guy, nice guy.
Several Halloween masks?
Yeah, he had a couple different ones. He was kind of circulating between them.
Huh. Where was he keeping them?
He just had like a little bag with like a little eco bag with him or whatever, and he had newspaper in there. Or whatever. I don't know. He was kind of a local goofball who knew the owner clearly.
Uh-huh.
He was kind of the norm of this place, as it were.
Sure.
Everybody knew this guy's name. So I did the show, and it was one of those shows where he wasn't heckly. He was just a little more responsive than one might like. But mm-hmm. This was one of those lighter shows where a few people were kind of responsive, and you just go, okay, that's fine. Let's do this. we'll just talk because it's, there's 35 people in here, and if that's what you guys want to do, we shall do that. So we had fun. It was kind of a crowd-worky show. We had a good time. And this guy really enjoyed the show, I guess, and he really wanted to talk to me about it afterwards. And I really needed to go. I had some things to do at home, and so I'm heading to my car. But he really wanted to talk to me specifically about the show Friends. He really liked the show Friends, which I find a little bit odd in anyone older than me. But he followed me.
I find it odd in anyone.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think it's a bad show. Straight up.
I cannot believe how attached some people are to that show.
I know. Perfect Strangers or something. You're like, really? I mean, I can see watching it, but like you watch reruns of Perfect Strangers or something,
Yeah.
You watch reruns of Friends? It's like if you had a bad haircut in the 90s, I get it, but you don't get that haircut again now. So this guy kind of follows me to my car, enthusiastically trying to talk me into being a fan of the show Friends and relaying to me in some detail his various favorite plots from episodes of Friends. And I was kind of doing that slow walk you do where you're like trying to – he's a nice guy. I didn't want to tell him to F off or anything. But at the same time, I kind of need to get to my car, so I'm doing the polite slow walk so that as long as you maintain motion, you can eventually get where you're going. And I realized as we got to my car that during this lengthy conversation where he broke down all these Friends episodes in great detail, he'd never taken off his werewolf mask. And I'm trying to get away from this werewolf who's like breaking down Ross and Rachel very, very sincerely.
Well, if you know anything about vampirology, vampires are supposed to be OCD. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. That is true, right? That's like kind of part of like can't cross the threshold. And
yeah. Yeah. I thought that
you're supposed to be able to like – you're supposed to like throw silver down and they'll want to rearrange the coins or something?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a friend of mine, she's into vampirology, she said, no, that one goes way back. That's like as old as a stake through the heart. And it's and apparently the people who came up with the character the Count knew that.
Ah, hence the Count.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So the second weird part of the story is that this was a Thursday. So Friday, I go into radio to do with Justice and Drew, like I do every Friday morning. And I just thought the story was really funny. So the first thing I did was I told this story. And, of course, they thought it was really funny. They were like, that's pretty wild. That's pretty wild, you know. And about 5 minutes after I told the story, Sam, our fantastic producer, clicks in and says, hey, fellas, we've got a call on line three from a guy. Who says he's the werewolf mask guy.
That actually sounds like a book, Call from a Werewolf.
Yes, right? So then John Justice, very, very smartly, thinking on his feet, says, well, how do we know? He's like, the guy was wearing a mask. Like, how would he confirm it? And I said, good point, John. And I know. I have a trivia question. And so the guy clicked on the line, and I honestly, I knew it was the guy right away from his voice. I thought, this has to be the guy. He had a kind of a weird goofball energy to him. And he said, I said, trivia question, what is your favorite Ross plot line of all time? Because he had spent a lot of time detailing his favorite Ross story. And then he, which is without missing a beat, oh, what, one where he goes into the spray tanner there. Oh, that one. And it was like, confetti drops from the ceiling, we have a winner, you know. And so we talked to Clark. His name's Clark. So we talked to Clark, the werewolf mask guy, for quite a while. And he keeps trying to defend his behavior as totally normal and claiming that I'm, like, embellishing the story. So John and Drew keep asking him detailed questions, and he just keeps confirming everything that I said over and over again.
You know what you should do is you should get Clark on the show with Emily.
Oh yeah, yeah, they could talk. They could have a
friends trivia off.
Absolutely, no. They would actually be quite well matched in that because Clark seemed to really know his friends.
Interesting to watch,
yes,
to say the least.
It was, the best part was I had told some of the weirder things that Clark had done the night before, and when John was quizzing him on it, John said. The guy said, well, I think your comedian's taking some poetic license there. And so John said.
Oh, so he wasn't Norm, he was Cliff.
Yeah, sound bad with voices. And so John said, well, is it true that you cajoled him into touching the snout of your werewolf mask, saying that it felt really realistic, and then you tried to bite his finger? And the guy goes, oh, I do that to everybody. A delight.
It was not a Kevin Spacey moment, you know?
No. But it's funny, when he did that in the parking lot, I kind of jerked back and goes, hi, I scared you. And I'm thinking, well, you scared me because you're a stranger in a werewolf mask standing alone with me in a parking lot who won't let me get into my car.
rub my nose was disturbing enough, but when you try to bite the finger, that's it. I'm, no.
Yeah. So it was that was definitely one of the more unique, probably the most unique of all fan interactions I've ever had.
Huh.
Clark.
Well, I was in. If you listen to episode 98, this is 99. We are next week will be our 100th episode.
Yeah.
By the way, and if you listen to 98, you know that I was in Minneapolis and ran into some fans there. I handed out candy after the show, which was really weird to me, because when I was handing it out, it is people were delighted. By the way, somebody actually told me she overheard in the washroom a girl say, "I didn't know he was really going to give us candy."
She thought you were just goofing around on stage. That's funny.
She thought I was goofing on stage, and she was just delighted that yes, there was candy.
I think you found the cheapest possible investment a comedian can make in his own show. You can buy a $5 bag of candy and do it every day.
I have an idea to extend that.
Ah.
And which I will hold because I'm not sure I'm going to do it. But the interesting thing that I noticed is I could tell the people who did not like my show. That was fun because
they didn't
they would they would not have my candy.
I like that. I will not eat your Twix bar.
I thought that was funny. Also, on stage, I said, you know, like me on Facebook, I'll give you a piece of candy. And I didn't really enforce that rule.
Sure, yeah, that's it was a, not. It's kind it, of like it was not a hard take one. There's a bit of an honesty policy was, there.
Yeah, exactly. It just everybody and you know, and I go, no, it's free. And they go, well, I can't get to my phone, can't get on Facebook down here. That's okay. Hey, do it later. Here you go, candy, mm-hmm. candy. Who doesn't want free candy? Yeah. It was also interesting is when everyone took a piece of candy. They all did that thing that kids are taught to do on Halloween. And, you know, these are adults. These are yeah. you know, these are 18 and over. And and it's, thank you. You know, the tone is my parents are making me say that, but I know I'm supposed to say it, so I'm saying it. And it's it was just really delightful for me to hear that everyone still has that imprinted in their hard drive, that is there indelibly. When somebody gives them candy out of a pumpkin bucket, they go, thank you.
Yeah, I would totally believe that. I absolutely believe that. I like the candy idea. I'm glad that went over well, though.
And, and we're running late. It is also another fan of the show. Came up to me and said that her favorite episode was the episode where you and I talked about jam. So
it was a very gentle episode.
Yeah, she said she could. She would actually, if we did a podcast, if you and I did a podcast on making jam, that she thinks it would be the greatest podcast ever.
Boy, imagine how hard it would be to come up with three segments a week on that. So what did we talk about last week? Oh, yeah, jam. You got three more jam segments?
Yeah, but you know what? It's I imagine the market we would be competing mm-hmm. in is we would definitely be stand-ups.
Find your niche, as they say, right?
Yeah, But we don't have much more time than that. As the clock on the wall says, it's time to give the website addresses and sign off. TimSlegel.com. That's where all the episodes are. All the information on Slegel at Tim Slegel on Twitter and Tim Slegel Comedy on Facebook.
Yep, and Brian Miller Comedy at Real Brian Miller on Twitter and BrianMillerComedy.com on the regular old website there.
And if you liked the jam episode or you didn't like the jam episode, how come you didn't put that on the comments on iTunes?
Oh yeah, great point.
That's all I have. It's leave us comments. That's how we get noticed.
Yeah, please do. Rate us, review us, say nice things.